The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, before we get started, I dropped another lyric video this weekend called Yes. It's with my label mate, Lex Aziz. So you can check that out on the Black Man Records YouTube channel, youtube.com/Black Man Records. And that's Black Man with a Q, BlaqManRecords.com. Or you can also check it out on my website, katietrop.net. So the UFC this weekend had a bunch of great fucking fights. It wasn't even a title bout or anything, but there were some great fights. I mean, it started off with the first two fights as two straight up knockouts, so that was a great way to start. And then just basically every single fight really was memorable, in my opinion. They were all really good, and the three that I think needed highlighting were obviously the three main fights, which started off with two women, Jarigay, I guess that's how you pronounce it. I can't really, I'm just guessing there. And she won in a three-round decision against Lucindo. And man, these two chicks, man, they just went at it. They were beating the absolute hell out of each other. And it was so close. It was really difficult to tell who was going to be the winner at the end of this one, because they were just, it was like they were just trading barbs, and they just were going in, and they just, man, they just put up a great fight. In my personal opinion, I felt like that was the fight of the night, even though the main event, it definitely was an excellent fight. But I think this one was the fight of the night, just because both women, they fought so hard, and it could have gone either way. And I mean, you really couldn't tell which female took whatever round it was they were in, because it was so close all the way until the end. And I mean, Lucindo is actually the youngest MMA fighter, right, or UFC fighter right now in the league. She's only 20 years old, but man, she was a killer. So I'm looking to see some more of her fights. I'm sure she's going to be doing plenty of fighting here in the near future, but she put on a show. Even though she didn't win, it was a great fight between those two ladies. Then right after that, it was Landwehr versus Onama, and it ended up ending in a decision for Landwehr. But it was one of the weirdest fights, because it started out like Onama in round one. It's like he blew all his energy in round one, because he was just knocking. Like, there was a couple punches that Landwehr took where you were like, oh shit, is this guy done for? And then he'd come to, and then he'd fight right back. And then he took round two, because you could tell just Onama was completely spent after round one. And then once we got into round three, it was really odd, because they were both spent. So it was mostly, for the most part, just the two of them kind of like leaning up against each other. And they'd try and throw each other down to kind of grapple, even though neither one of them could really get anything going on the ground. But it was one of the weirdest fights for sure, especially just how Onama came right out and looked like he was going to knock a motherfucker out. And Landwehr, he just really overcame all the obstacles that, because he was getting beat the fuck up in round one, and he came right back in round two and just started to get it going. And he actually had some punches where it looked like he knocked Onama out, and he was able to maintain and still keep it going. But it was really crazy just to kind of see the both of them really start to dissipate as the fight wore on. But the main event definitely did not disappoint, and that was Chito Vera versus Dominick Cruz. And man, it was basically how a Chito Vera fight goes. Now, I've probably seen every Chito Vera fight since 2020, because 2020 is basically when I really started getting into UFC, because it was that horrible time where we had absolutely no sports, and the only sport on at the time was UFC. So I really latched onto the UFC definitely in 2020. And I have seen Chito Vera's every fight since 2020 that he's done. And every fight basically is the same, where it looks like he's getting his ass kicked in round one. And you're like, dude, what is this guy doing? Because that's basically what happened in this one, where like it started out round one, Dominic Cruz looked like he was just dominating the hell out of Vera. And I was like, man. And I was like, well, this is kind of what Vera is known for. He'll start off slow and then he'll knock your ass out in a later round. And that is exactly what he did. He actually wore Cruz down. Cruz was in it the whole way. But then as it started to wear on, you could really see that Vera was really getting to him. And Vera knocked him out with a cold, with a kick in round four. And I mean, he knocked him out cold. And it wasn't even close. It was just crazy to watch. But that's just, that's what Vera does. And in my personal opinion, I think Chito Vera has done enough to prove that he definitely belongs and he should get to fight for a title contention here. I think his next bout should be against the belt holder. So we'll see what happens with him. But he is one hell of a fighter. It's just always crazy. It always looks like he's going to get his ass beat in the first round, but then he just knows how to just keep it going. And he even takes a lot of crazy hits, but he's able to come right back and knock a motherfucker out, and he did not disappoint this weekend. All right, and then in baseball, let's get to the top 10 MLB power rankings this week. I wouldn't say a lot is shaken up, especially in the top five. It's basically about the same teams, just maybe a little bit of a different mixture, except for number one. Goddamn stupid Los Angeles Dodgers are still number one on my top 10 this week. Overall record of 79-34. They are coming off of a 12-game winning streak. They did lose yesterday, but they haven't lost in like 2 weeks. They're 9-1 in their last 10 games. This week they played Kansas City Royals and the Minnesota Twins. They even had one game the other day where they had 6 home runs in one game. Max Muncy, like the day before, had 4 hits in one game. And their starting pitching just continues to dominate. Tony Gonsolin has 14 wins on the season. Tyler Anderson has 13 wins on the season. Julio Urias has 12 wins on the season. And, you know, they still have Clayton Kershaw. He's going to come back at some point. Now, they did get some bad news that looks like Walker Buehler, he's going to undergo Tommy John surgery, which means he's definitely going to be out at least for a year. So there's a good chance that he's going to be missing the first half of next year. So he's already missed, what, like the last month or two. So he's probably, he's definitely going to miss the rest of this season. And chances are he's going to miss the start of next season as well, because Tommy John surgery is almost always a year to year and a half long process to get over. So, and Walker Buehler is an excellent pitcher. So I expect him to rebound because it used to be that when you got Tommy John surgery, your career was practically over, or you weren't going to be the same pitcher. But these days, that's not really the case anymore. So I still expect him to bounce back strong. But really, at this point, I don't think that really even matters for the Dodgers because they've still been dominating without Buehler. Like I said, their three starting pitchers that just rattled off are all dominating. They all have low ERAs in the twos, you know. So the Dodgers have absolutely nothing to worry about, at least at this point in the season, they don't. Then at number two on my top 10 MLB power rankings are the New York Mets. Overall record of 75-40, 8-2 in their last 10. This week they played the Philadelphia Phillies and the Cincinnati Reds. And man, their starting pitching, it's just insane how great they're doing. You know, Jacob DeGrom, he had yet another spectacular start this past week. But just also of note with the Mets, they have the lowest ERA in the league since Max Scherzer came off of the injured list about, what, a month and a half ago? So ever since then, they have had the lowest ERA in the league, and that says a lot. And while I was just talking about the Dodgers and how great they are as a team, I really think they got to watch out for the Mets, because the Mets' starting pitching is deep, their bullpen is deep, And they play great on offense and they play great on defense. Now, you also can't count out the Braves because I think they can match up well. They have a great starting pitching, great batting, great defense. So there's really nothing wrong with any of those three National League teams. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens come playoff time in the National League, because all three of those teams I just rattled off on have excellent teams from top to bottom. And there really isn't a weakness on one of those three teams other than injuries, but all three of them have seemed to overcome the injuries that have come their way. Then at number three in my top 10 MLB power rankings, the Houston Astros, overall record of 75-41, 7-3 in their last 10 games. They are on a four-game winning streak right now. They just swept the Oakland A's this weekend, and they played the Texas Rangers earlier in the week. Bregman, man, this guy, he is a streaky hitter. He always has been. He's always great on defense, but offensively, he's always one of those streaky hitters where he'll be cold, then hot, then cold, then hot, and right now, dude is on fire. He was pretty much involved in every single game this week. He had a couple home runs this week, huge game-winning home run yesterday. Then you also have Kyle Tucker, who continues to dominate offensively. But then you got to take a look at their starting pitching as well. Christian Javier, he had an excellent outing the other day where he had six strikeouts. And then Justin Verlander, he leads the league still in wins with five. And I believe he still has the lowest ERA in the league. I can't remember what it was because I did not write it down. But I think it's like a 1.12, 1.23, something like that. But regardless, Justin Verlander still continues to dominate. Then at number four in my top 10 MLB power rankings, the Atlanta Braves, overall record of 70-46. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games, and they are actually on a six-game winning streak. This past week, they just swept the Miami Marlins and the Boston Red Sox. And like I was just talking about, their starting pitching is so deep that another pitcher showed out this week, Bryce Elder. He just had 10 strikeouts in a huge game this weekend. Then you got Ronald Acuna, who still continues to have a great season offensively. And, like I was just saying about the Braves, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in the National League come playoff time, because all three of these teams, they've got excellent starting pitching. And when you got great starting pitching, it's really difficult to get runs. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens between those three teams. Because it's definitely going to come down to those three teams. But man, if you just look at them, it's really difficult to pick which one is the better of the three. But if I have to pick one, I probably am actually going to pick the Mets, which is weird, but just because they've been the most consistent. Their starting pitching, I mean, Scherzer, DeGrom, Taijuan Walker, Carrasco. And they're just playing some great team baseball. So I would lean towards them, although, I mean, you really can't go wrong with the Dodgers or the Braves. Then at number five on my top 10 MLB power rankings are the New York Yankees. Their overall record of 72-43, and they have really taken a tumble these last couple of weeks. They're 2-8 in their last 10 games, and they just finished finished a road tour, and they only went 2-7 in those road games, so that's not good at all. This past week, they played the Boston Red Sox and the Seattle Mariners and got owned by both of them. And the main issue really is their bullpen. And also offensively, Aaron Judge, for the most part, has been the majority of their offense. He still leads the league with 46 home runs and 100 RBI. He also has a 300 batting average, so he still continues to dominate. But then everybody else around him right now has just hit a cold streak. They've also had some injuries, and they've also had some bullpen issues as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the AL, because it looked like it was going to be a race between the Astros and the Yankees, and it probably still is going to come down to those two. But the Yankees really got to get it going, because they are not looking good at all right now. Then at number six on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have the Cleveland Guardians. Overall record of 61-53, 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Toronto Blue Jays and the Detroit Tigers. Shane Bieber, he's really been on fire the last couple of starts. He had six strikeouts in his last start, and he's just seems to found he's back to his Cy Young form. And then you got Jose Ramirez, who still continues to dominate as well. He's got 22 home runs, 93 RBI, and is batting at .283 on the season currently. And the Guardians have had a really good, I want to say like last month has been good for them. So, and they actually just took the lead in their division as well this weekend. So that division has been owned by the Twins for the most part, but now the Guardians have, they're shaking shit up, and it looks like they're going to be a difficult team to take out come playoff time. Then at number 7 on my top 10 MLB power rankings are the St. Louis Cardinals, overall record of 63-51, 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week they played the Milwaukee Brewers and the Colorado Rockies. And I mean, it's really been all about Albert Pujols. Dude hit 2 home runs yesterday in one game. And he right now is at 689 career home runs. So he is almost at 700 career home runs. It's going to be difficult for him to get to 700, I think, this season. And who knows if he's playing next season. So we don't know if he's going to get to that plateau. But honestly, if anybody could do it, he could. He's really, he's not his old self, but he's still playing some great baseball. But then also you got to look at their starting pitching, and Miles Mikolas, he has really had a solid season, and he had a great week also. His last start, he was striking dudes out, and the Cardinals, they are a silent killer right now, and poised to make a playoff run and probably take out one of these teams and maybe make things a little bit more interesting out in the National League come playoff time. Then at number 8 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have the Philadelphia Phillies, overall record of 63-51, 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the New York Mets and the Miami Marlins, and they're starting pitching. It just continues to dominate. Aaron Nola, he had a great outing, and Zach Wheeler also had a great outing this week. Their offense, they Kyle Schwarber, he's still second behind Aaron Judge with, I think, 34 home runs, something like that. He did kind of cool off this week, but other than that, he's still an offensive force for the Phillies. And they continue to play some great baseball, even though they started off the season very shaky. Then at number 9 on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the Tampa Bay Rays, overall record of 60-53, 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week they played the Baltimore Orioles and the I can't even read my handwriting. It looks like it's Milwaukee Brewers. So we're going to go with that, even though, yeah, I think that's what my handwriting says, but for some reason, my handwriting looks like shit right there. So we're going to go with Milwaukee Brewers. They played against somebody with that begins with M, and it kind of looks like Milwaukee. So we'll see. But either way, they had a great week of baseball this week, and their pitcher, as I've mentioned in the past, the Tampa Bay Rays really know how to build pitchers, especially just from the farm system. And they always seem to, even though they find these guys, they always seem to trade them away at some point. But at some point during their tenure in the Tampa Bay Rays, they end up throwing for like a perfect game or what, having an amazing outing. And just yesterday, Rasmussen, he was perfect through 9 innings. Now, he didn't get, he was like 3 outs away from a perfect game, but he ended up going 9 innings strong and having a great game yesterday. Then Randy Arozarena, he's really on fire the last couple of weeks. He's really caught fire, and you really don't want that guy to get going, because not only is he powerful with his bat, but he's known to steal some bases as well, so you really got to watch him as a base runner. Then it rounding out the top 10 MLB power rankings this week is the Chicago White Sox, overall record of 59-56. 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Detroit Tigers and the Kansas City Royals. And offensively, they just have really got it going. You know, they've got Andrew Vaughn, who's had a solid season. Yoan Moncada, he's had a great week. And then Eloy Jimenez, he's had a great couple of weeks. He seems to have finally got hot at the right time as well. And then their starting pitcher, Andrew Cease, he has had a phenomenal season. He has the lowest ERA through, 13, 14 games now, the lowest ERA ever in the history of the league, I think since like 1913 or something crazy like that. So while the White Sox are not a team that are blowing anybody out of the water, they probably are going to be a team that sneaks into the playoffs. And who knows, if they get hot, they might be able to blow somebody up just because they do have it going offensively and they do have decent starting pitching. Right now they are rounding out the top 10 this week. Then just a couple other notes in baseball from this week. The Texas Rangers ended up firing their manager today, Chris Woodward. And I mean, it makes sense because the Rangers actually have not been a competitive team for a couple years now, and they just spent $500 million this offseason building their roster, thinking they were going to at least be a playoff contender. And right now, the Texas Rangers are not a good squad. If they make the playoffs, it's going to be because they back their way into the playoffs, but I don't even think they've got a shot at the playoffs at this point in time. And so they ended up firing their manager. So that's the first domino to fall right now. I mean, we've already had a couple managers fired earlier in the season, but now you're really going to see it happen since we're headed towards the end of the season. And then also big baseball news this weekend, Fernando Tatis, the shortstop of the San Diego Padres, he has been suspended 80 games for testing positive for PEDs. This is a very stupid move on his part. Just because, A, the Padres have already, they signed him to a big deal last year, a near $400 million deal. I believe it's a $360 million deal. So this guy got the bag. And so this season he started off with, you know, we had the lockout between the Players Association and MLB. So there wasn't baseball for a couple weeks. But in that time from the lockout until they signed a new contract, a new collective bargaining agreement, Fernando Tatis actually got into a motorcycle accident, and that's why he hasn't played all season, because he ended up breaking his wrist. And so that was already a stupid move, and that already looked dumb, but I mean, we could all just kind of look past it, go, he's dumb. Of course, he's going to fuck up and crash his motorcycle. He would not be the first player to do that in the history of sports. Actually, quite a few motorcycle accidents have happened over the history of sports, in all sports, from baseball to football to basketball to, there are just many times where you are kind of like, well, I see why they have these really stupid rules in your contract where you can't ride a motorcycle. I'm starting to think they might limit riding bicycles as well soon here too, because there's been some guys who've gotten injured just from riding their bikes. So, and you know, these guys are getting paid a lot of money, just like Tatis is. And so he got injured and he hasn't been playing at all. And now he got popped for PEDs and he's definitely going to miss the rest of this season for sure. And obviously he did it because A, he didn't appeal the suspension. But also at the same time, a lot of times when guys are using PEDs, it's because they're recovering from an injury. Apparently, PEDs help you recover quicker from injuries. And so I have a feeling he probably started using them to recover quicker from his injury. That's not to say he hasn't been using them his entire career. It's possible he could have, but I just theorize he probably was using them for this, but for the injury. But regardless, this is such a stupid, idiotic move on his part. Just because, like I said, he got that huge contract. And when you get that huge contract, you have to be held accountable. And what was even worse about this was his stupid-ass apology, which was not even really an apology. He basically just said he got ringworm, and he got it from an antibiotic he was taking from ringworm, which is, it's just such a bullshit excuse. He should have done was just owned up to it, just said, yeah, I've been injured this offseason. I was starting to get desperate, and I just needed to do something in order to get back into the game. I used PEDs. I'm sorry to my teammates. I'm sorry to the front office. I'm sorry to the San Diego Padres organization. I'm sorry to the fans, and I'm sorry to MLB, blah, blah, blah. He could have said something like that, but instead he made up some lie, and he really didn't accept any type of responsibility for the situation. And he looks really stupid. Now, granted, he still has his big contract, so there really isn't anything the Padres can do. But their president came out and released a statement right after this, and he was pissed off. And it's obvious that he was pissed off, but I don't think they're going to trade him, because obviously Fernando Tatis is an excellent baseball player. He got that huge contract for a reason. So there's really no value in trading him. But this just is not a good look. Like I said, he's still going to get paid. He's going to lose the 80 games that he's suspended for. He is going to lose money for that. But the way his contract works out is that actually these first couple of seasons of his contract, he gets like, I think he gets like $3.5 million this year. And while that's great money for us, the way it accelerates the next couple of years, it goes up to like $15 million and then it goes up to 20 and then like 25 and then like something like 36, I think at one point. So it accelerates completely and he does make a lot more on the back end. So he isn't losing that much money out of his full overall contract, but he is going to be losing the money from this 80 game suspension. But he just looks like Boo Boo the Fool, in my opinion. I still think he's a great player. Like I said, I don't think he's been using PEDs the whole time. I feel like this was more of a injury-related thing. But this definitely does not look good for him, especially with how he came into this season with the stupid motorcycle accident. And also on top of that motorcycle accident, he wasn't honest with the San Diego Padres about it. They literally found out like the day spring training started, and he had broken it like a month or two beforehand. So he doesn't look good at all. He looks very irresponsible, and he makes it look like, they may not say it out loud, but the San Diego Padres may be regretting that huge contract they just gave this dude. But we'll see what happens. But we definitely won't be seeing Fernando Tatis at all the rest of this season, which really sucks for the Padres, because you could tell they were going all in by just trading for Juan Soto and just trading for Josh Hader and just making all these big moves in the offseason and at the trade deadline. And they were trying to at least make a move to be a contender in the playoffs for the second half of the season. And now this kind of puts them in question. Now, they have had a pretty solid season overall, but Fernando Tatis was a huge part of their offense, and he's definitely going to be a missing factor for them, regardless of what happened. So, sucks for the Padres, sucks for Fernando Tatis, and he just looks like a complete idiot, in my opinion, in this situation. All right, and now let's move on to the NFL. I am going to be beginning making my 2022 season predictions, beginning with today's show. Today we're going to start with the NFC and AFC East, and then we're going to just move on from each AFC and NFC division each day, leading all the way up until I'm going to make Super Bowl predictions as well. But before we get to that, something I found hilarious happened this weekend. Happened to good old Dick Dangling Deshaun. He did get to play in the Cleveland Browns preseason game this weekend, and he got a taste of what is going to be his reality when he goes to other opposing stadiums, at least for the time being. And Jaguars fans were chanting a couple of things at him during the game. The first being "no means no." And then the second, which is my favorite, is they were chanting "you sick fuck." So I find that hilarious. And you get what you deserve in that one. I mean, obviously, it is what it is with him. But that is what's hilarious about, if you do fuck up, fans are going to let you have it. And while I think, for the most part, fans can be stupid about a lot of shit, when they do things like this, like when they mock the Astros for being cheaters, which they don't really get to do much anymore because the Astros just keep winning. And now you don't really hear anything from the fans, because what the fuck can you say when they're winning? But for the time being, Deshaun Watson's definitely going to keep hearing things like that. So sorry about you, you sick fuck. All right, so let's move on to my predictions. Let's begin with the NFC East. Since you know my Dallas Cowboys reside in the NFC East, I might as well start over there. And so this is how I think the NFC East is going to break down this year. I think the NFC East division winner, of course, is going to be my Dallas Cowboys. I think they're going to finish with a 12-5 record. This offseason, the big losses to the team were they traded away Amari Cooper. They lost Cedric Wilson in free agency, and then they also lost Randy Gregory. I think they're all replaceable pieces. I think out of all three of them, while I am upset that Amari Cooper was traded away, I really liked him as a Cowboy. He was an injury-prone receiver. So I wasn't actually, when the more time has gone on, I'm not as upset. I think Cedric Wilson is more of a loss just because he's younger. And you could tell he had some chemistry with Dak. And really this season, in my personal opinion, I think the Cowboys' biggest weakness on offense is probably going to be the wide receiver position, because if CeeDee Lamb gets injured, we're fucked, because Michael Gallup, we don't know when he's going to play. He's definitely not playing week one. He's coming off of a torn ACL injury, so he could potentially miss at least like the first 4 weeks of the season. So who knows what's going to happen there, but the depth at wide receiver is very concerning. But then a couple of additions in the offseason that we made were Anthony Barr, which I think is a huge move. We just signed him a couple weeks ago. But that really strengthens the linebacking core. And then the rookie Tyler Smith. You really didn't know what you were going to get, but with his first game, he actually showed some promise. He wasn't perfect, of course, but I think he had a very solid game. And I'm not the only one who thinks that either. I kind of read the review on him, and a lot of people think he has a lot of great potential as well. I do think the pros for the Cowboys this year, the positives, definitely for me, I think it's great that they've been under the radar for the majority of this offseason. There hasn't been any like contract disputes. There hasn't been any of who's going to be the quarterback, who's going to be the starter at this position, what. This person's going to Cabo San Lucas. There's this happening. No, there's absolutely nothing going on with the Dallas Cowboys this offseason other than them playing football. So I really like that. But as a fan, I'm going to keep it real with you. I'm going into the season with absolutely zero expectations from the Cowboys, because last year I went into the season with high expectations and they let me down as usual. So I know they're not a terrible team, but one thing that I think works against them this season is definitely going to be their schedule. If you look at their schedule, it's their first four games are the Buccaneers, the Bengals, the Giants, the Commanders, the Rams, the Eagles, and so that's actually their first six games right there. Those are all, you've got three of their division opponents, so those are always up in the air games, no matter how shitty one of them may be. They're still division opponents. But then you got freaking Tampa Bay, who's got Tom Brady on the team, and you got Cincinnati Bengals, who were just in the Super Bowl, and then you've got the Los Angeles Rams, who just won the Super Bowl. So it's like the Cowboys' schedule to start is going to be really difficult. And so I don't know what to expect there. With their division, I do think they're going to win their division, because the rest of the division is very, very weak, and the rest of the teams are very awful. But I think the Cowboys are definitely going to have some difficulties at the start of the season. I do think that the positives definitely, I think on defense, I think we have a lot of depth. We've made a lot of signings this season. Nobody who's like extremely flashy and who's like a top guy, outside of Anthony Barr. Anthony Barr is that dude. But other than that, for the most part, we've got a lot of veteran dudes who could come in and be playmakers, and they don't have to be the number one guy. And so I really think defensively, the Cowboys are going to be one of the top five in the league. Then I also like, so far, what I see from Dak. This offseason, he's been very, his usual even-keeled self. But when you see him on the practice field, he seems to have it back with his throwing. I kind of have a feeling that calf injury was a lot worse, or at least hampered him a lot worse than we really expected. So I am looking forward to seeing what we got from Dak this season. He's definitely going to have to take over. And the offense is going to have to roll through him. A lot of people like it to roll through Zeke, but I kind of feel like Zeke gets worse every year. I mean, he's no longer the running back he used to be. So I don't think the ground game can really, I don't even think the offense can really run through him like it used to. I think Dak has to be the dude. And we'll see what happens, because like I said, that wide receiver depth is very suspect. While I think CeeDee Lamb, he's going to be outstanding. Beyond him, and Michael Gallup, he's going to be good once he's healthy. But beyond those two, man, it's very questionable. Also questionable on this team, which really sucks because it's going to be like the third, fourth year in a row where the kicker has been an issue. We have had to bring in multiple kickers this offseason. We really don't even know who's going to be the starting kicker at this rate. And that's, you might not think that's a big deal, not a big deal, but it actually is a big deal. You need a you need at least a consistent kicker. And right now we don't know what the hell's going on there. I will say, from the Cowboys preseason game, it was very annoying for them to come out in the first preseason game and have 17 total penalties. So it doesn't look like they've cleaned that part of the team up. So that kind of sucks. But once again, it was just preseason as well. So I do think the Cowboys are going to finish on top in the NFC East for sure. Now, as far as NFC playoffs, I don't think they're going to be like the number one seed, but I definitely still think they're going to be a playoff contender. All right, and then I think the Philadelphia Eagles will finish in second place. I think they will come out with a record of 9-8. I think it's very odd because everybody is just on the Philadelphia Eagles train this year. They just keep having all these great, amazing, positive things to say about them. And Jalen Hurts, just how much better he is. And I'm just like, what the fuck are we talking about here? I mean, really, if you actually look at their offense, what the hell's going on at running back? They don't even have like a solid ground attack there. So that's a very suspect portion of the offense. Now, I will say, they really didn't lose anybody in the offseason, but they did make a huge addition with A.J. Brown. They traded for the wide receiver A.J. Brown from the Tennessee Titans, who's arguably been one of the best wide receivers in the league. And I think he's a huge addition, especially because you already have Smith, the rookie from last year, who showed out and had a great season. So I think their wide receiving core is going to be good. And I think they will light a few teams up. But overall, I'm not really expecting much from the Eagles. I mean, like I said, their wide receiving core is deep with A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and Quez Watkins. And then even the guys behind them, they're really good. They could be like starters on other teams. So their wide receiving core is very solid. They definitely wanted to make sure they got Jalen Hurts some weapons this offseason. But the running back position, I don't know what the hell they're doing there. Also, the offensive line is meh, so we'll see what goes on there. Also, what we've been known for with the Eagles is their defense, and their defense is exceptionally questionable. There isn't really any standout player on their defense, at least from just overlooking their roster. So I do think the Eagles will have one of those seasons where they will upset a couple of teams. They might have a hot streak where they get a couple wins in a row. But I said they're going to be a 9-8 team, so that's barely above 500. I don't think they're going to be that great of a team. They might sneak in with at the last playoff spot, something like that. But I don't really expect the Eagles to be that great of a team like everybody else is expecting them to be this season. Then at number three, I've got the New York Giants, who just look like an absolutely atrocious team. And looking over their roster, I was like, what the fuck is this? First of all, I think their overall record this year is going to be 5-12, and I think even that's going to be generous right there. This offseason, their really only major loss was the tight end Evan Ingram, and their only good addition was their rookie Kayvon Thibodeau. He was their first overall pick. He's going to be their defensive end, so I think he's definitely going to help make their defense a lot better. But, I mean, he's really their only bright spot. I mean, so far, the word on Daniel Jones is he's just been absolutely atrocious. And when that's the word on you during training camp, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens during the regular season. The Giants are not a good team. There isn't anything outside of Saquon Barkley and Kayvon Thibodeau. This team has no really good players. They just are awful. There's really nothing good to say about them. When I was looking over their roster, I'm like, who are you? Who are you? What the fuck? And just everything about them is off, and they're just going to be a horrifying team. And I almost picked them to be the last place team in the NFC East, but I had to go with the Washington Commanders. I think they're going to be 3-14 this year. And it's just a lot of their off-season turmoil, I think, is finally starting to seep into the actual team. I think Ron Rivera, he's a great coach. And I think he's been put in the shittiest position of all by being the coach of this team. Yes, he took the job. I'm sure he knew what he was getting into at the time. Or maybe he didn't. With the owner of this team, you never fucking know what you're getting into. But regardless, I have a feeling he's going to be the fall guy at some point in this season. Let's see who they lost in the offseason. They lost some really top guys. They lost offensive lineman Brandon Sheriff. They released safety Landon Collins, who is a defensive powerhouse, by the way. And then Ryan Kerrigan retired. So they lost some really top guys on their team. And their only addition they made was Carson Wentz, who's been shaky and shoddy his entire career. And apparently he can't even handle answering questions because that's too difficult for his fucking ass. So how the hell is he going to be quarterback of this team if he can't even fucking answer questions that are, quote, too hard and too difficult, according to their team president? But I mean, really, this team is awful. They don't have a lot of, especially on defense. Defensively is what used to be their bread and butter. Even when they were a bad team over the last few seasons, their defense has been really good. This year, I don't know. We don't even know if their starting defensive end is going to be starting the season off. Is he gonna play or is he not? Like, we don't know what the hell's gonna go on with this team. Really, the only positive thing we could say about the stupid, idiotic Washington Commanders is, I guess, at least they finally have a team name, because I was sick and tired of them being called the Washington Football Team for the last couple of seasons, because that was ridiculous. So as stupid as the Commander sounds to me, at least they have a team name. But I think that they are going to be one of the worst teams in the league, and I wouldn't be surprised if Ron Rivera loses his job mid-season or at the end of the season, and he's the fall guy, even though he's the only good guy on this team. All right, so moving on to the AFC East and my predictions over there. I think the team that's going to win the AFC East is going to be the Buffalo Bills. As a matter of fact, I think the Buffalo Bills are going to be the best team in the league this season. I think their overall record is going to be 14-3. And I just think it's finally their time to shine. They've been slowly building over the last couple of seasons. You could see Josh Allen getting better. You could see they kind of making further and further into the playoffs. And they're just a solid team overall. This season they lost Emmanuel Sanders and Cole Beasley, so they didn't really lose major players. I think these two could be replaced. But they made a huge addition in Von Miller, and I think he is the missing piece that they were missing this entire time. Because they need that veteran leadership. It's what they've really been missing. And Von Miller's got two Super Bowl rings. He won the MVP of the one where he was with the Denver Broncos. Even when the Broncos weren't a good team, Von Miller was still a spectacular linebacker and still led that squad. And he would still lead the league in tackles and sacks and everything. So Von Miller is that dude. And I think he is exactly what they were missing, not only on the team, but also the defense. Because defensively, the Bills, their weaknesses over the past couple of seasons has been defense and the running back position. But with the addition of Von Miller, I think that completes their defense. I think that makes them a stout defense. And I just think that puts them exactly where they need to be heading into this season. I also think Josh Allen, he's going to have a spectacular season. I think he's going to win the MVP. And if he doesn't win the MVP, I think he's going to at least be in the conversation for MVP, just because he's also, you know, coming into what this is his fourth, fifth season now. So he's coming into that. And, you know, he just gets better and better with every season. And I just kind of feel like this is the year for the Bills. And they're also in a weak-ass division, so they're going to get some really good wins by being in a weak-ass division. My only weakness with the Bills is still the running back position. Singletary is currently their starting running back, and he has not been consistent for them over the last couple of seasons. He keeps getting injured, so I would say that's their only weakness. But really, overall, the Buffalo Bills, I think, are the best team and the team to beat this season. Then at number, I think the Miami Dolphins will finish in second place in the AFC East. I think they're going to end up 10-7. This past, they lost Jason McCourty. He retired in the offseason. But they made some big additions offensively. They added Tyreek Hill, Cedric Wilson at wide receiver, and then Raheem Mostert and Chase Edmonds at running back. So they have some really, offensively, they've got a lot of firepower. I mean, they really, like Tua Tagovailoa, not that great of a quarterback. But this season, I think he's going to show out because they've got the depth at the wide receiver position. I mean, they already had Jaylen Waddle last year. Then they add in Tyreek Hill and Cedric Wilson. And these are all guys who are really who are really fast and could kill you with yards after the catch. So I really expect the Miami Dolphins offense to be really good. And then their offensive line is stacked. And then, like I said, they added Mostert in the backfield, who is coming off of an injury, but he's been a solid running back his entire career. And then you also have Chase Edmonds, who's been a solid running back. So I think between the two of them, they're going to have a solid ground attack. My only question really with the Dolphins is on the defensive side of the ball. Beyond Xavien Howard, they don't really have any huge playmakers. They did sign Melvin Gordon, the linebacker who used to be with the San Diego Chargers, but I don't know if he's that going to be that much of an impact maker defensively. So I think their weakness is going to be on the defensive side of the ball, but it's also going to be helpful to them that they are in a weak division as well. And I really actually think the Miami Dolphins, I have them as like a surprise team this year to actually be pretty good and also make the playoffs as well. Then I think the New York Jets are going to finish third in the AFC East. I think their record's going to be 8-9. This past season, they lost Shaq Lawson. That was their biggest loss in the offseason. And I'd say their best addition in the offseason was tight end CJ Uzama. The Jets are a very odd team. I mean, Zach Wilson's already injured. He got injured this weekend in the first preseason game, and he's going to be out 2 to 4 weeks. So, hell, who knows what the hell's going to happen with him. But it is just very weird because they didn't really add a lot of offensive weapons for Zach Wilson. So I kind of have a feeling Zach Wilson's should get used to being injured, because I have a feeling he's going to spend a lot of this season injured because a lot of the offense is going to rely on him. He's going to have to scramble when he shouldn't be scrambling, and he's probably going to get injured in some positions where he just had to do it because he's their only offensive weapon. On defense, though, I definitely think they have a stout defense. You know, their coach Saleh, that's what he's known for, is defense. So I think defensively they'll be all right, and that's what I think is going to keep them in games. But I think offensively they're going to struggle, and I have a feeling Zach Wilson is going to spend the season injured for the most part because it's all going to rely on him, and he's not really that big of a quarterback. Not saying he doesn't have quarterback skill set. I mean, when he takes off, he's fast as hell. But there are some times that I feel like he's going to have to just take off because it's going to be his only option, and he's probably going to get injured. And that's what's going to, I believe, send the Jets' season into a tailspin because they do need to get him some offensive weapons outside of CJ Uzama, because Uzama is just a tight end. While tight ends are a great weapon to have in the league, they really shouldn't be your only offensive output. And then this is very shocking, but when you look at this team, it's not that shocking. Rounding out the AFC East, I believe this season, is going to be the New England Patriots. I think their overall record is going to be 5-12 this season because this team is pathetic. You look over this roster and it's the who the fuck are these guys roster. I mean, wow. This has got to be the worst team Bill Belichick has ever coached in his entire career. And this includes his tenure as the Cleveland Browns coach or as the New York Jets coach. Like, this is a god-awful team. They don't have anybody good on this team. And they lost so many players this offseason. I mean, first of all, they lost Josh McDaniels, their offensive coordinator, who I think was the only good thing about their offense last year, even though their offense was pretty awful. But he definitely, I think, helped Mac Jones at least look semi-decent. So they lost him. He went and is now the coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. So they don't have him anymore. Then James White, the running back, he retired about a week ago. Then linebacker Dante Hightower, they let him go. Then they traded away linebacker Chase Vinovich, And then they also let J.C. Jackson, the best cornerback in the league last year, they let him go as well. So they basically let a whole bunch of good-ass players go on defense, especially. They made no good additions in the offseason this year. And it's just been one of the weirdest, and absolutely no positive things have been said about Mac Jones in training camp so far. And so it's weird that I have the New England Patriots as my worst team in the AFC East, but I think they're going to be one of the worst teams in the league for sure this year. I don't know what the hell the Patriots are doing. They didn't make any good signings this offseason. They have no offensive weapons outside of tight end. But, I mean, their tight end, they're paying a lot of money for these tight ends, but they haven't proven that they're that good. Offensive line is weak. Running back position is awful. Wide receiver position, there's like nobody. And Mac Jones is a very mediocre quarterback. So offensively, the New England Patriots are going to be garbage. And defensively, I don't think they're going to be much better because McCourty is really their only guy who I recognized for the most part on that defense. So this is going to be the first time in a long time that I think New England Patriot fans are going to be they're going to be reeling because, you know, this past season that they're coming off of, not a good season, but, you know, it wasn't as horrible as I think this season's going to be. I think this season's going to be one of those years where they're going to be lucky if they get a win. They're going to be like, they'll get a win and then probably lose four, then get a win, then probably lose four. It's going to be something like that where they're just going to be reeling. And I don't think these New England Patriot fans are ready for that because they've just been used to winning the last 20 plus years. So, I'm sorry, New England Patriot fans, you might want to, us Cowboys fans, we can counsel you guys because we know what it's like, you know, being that the dominant team, being the best team in the league, and winning Super Bowls and then turning to shit and then being shit for years on end, we can counsel you. I know I can do it. I've actually got one of my best friends, Megan. She's a huge Patriots fan. So, Megan, if you need some help or you know any other Patriots fans who need to talk, I got your back because I know what you all are going through, and for y'all this is just the beginning because. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with the Patriots. And if they are as shitty as they are that I expect them to be this season, what's going to happen with Bill Belichick? Is he going to retire? Because I don't think they would fire him just yet. I think if next year it's really bad, that's when they might start to question it. But I don't know. This might actually be the end of the Bill Belichick era. But we'll see. Like I said, I think this is going to be a very odd year for the New England Patriots. Their fans are definitely not going to be used to it. If you're a Patriot hater, you're definitely going to be like loving it because they've been the dominating team, like I said, for the last 20 freaking years. So, hey, the haters are going to enjoy it, but Patriots fans, I don't know how they're going to handle it because they've been used to being that dominant team for years and not anymore. All right, so those are my my AFC and NFC East season predictions. I don't know. What am I going to do next? Friday, I'm going to do the North. So we'll go ahead and do the AFC and NFC North predictions on Friday. So until then, man, enjoy the rest of the week of baseball. And I will talk to you foolios on Friday.